Welcome to Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans and Jeff Shade, a show that simplifies the complexities of investments, taxes, retirement, and more so you can discover how to better sustain yourself and your wealth for years to come. Brian is a CPA with 30 years experience and a financial advisor, which brings a unique perspective to the financial world. This show is brought to you by Madrona Financial and CPAs, home of the Rooted Wealth Plan. Want a retirement plan designed to last 30 plus years? Go to MadronaFinancial.com and click Get Started to see what the Rooted Wealth Plan can do for you. And now, here are your hosts, Brian Evans and Jeff Shade.
Thank you so much. Welcome to Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans, the show that gives you the straight talk and honest answers you need to help you sustain yourself and your wealth for 30 plus years. On today's show, we're going to be discussing what women need to know about retirement. Also, what does it mean to be a fiduciary? My name's Jeff Shade, and as always, I am just here to ask the questions for you. But of course, the words of wisdom and solid advice, they come from Brian Evans, CEO and President of Madrona Financial and CPAs. Hey, Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jeff.
Always glad to hear that, Brian. I hope our listeners are doing well today too. And once again, we have another information-packed show lined up for us. Brian, women are expected to live longer than men according to statistics. How does this longevity play a factor in their retirement planning?
Yeah, it's more than just longevity that women need to be concerned about. Many times the man in the relationship handled the finances for the family, and the wife trusted the husband and never really followed what was going on as closely as he did. And I want to preface all of this with, you know, it's always difficult to use generalizations because people go, well, that's not the case in my family. No, it may not be. But statistically, I just looked it up, over 75% of people that have lost their spouse are women, meaning less than 25%. So I guess I'm talking to 75% of the people out there with this segment,
right,
where the woman would statistically outlive their spouse. And so that's why it's a very important thing. And as I've said on this show before, when we're doing financial planning, we're really planning for the surviving spouse, male or female, but we're planning for the surviving spouse. And very often we're looking at age differences, we're looking at health differences, family longevity, other health issues that may be present or not present with one or the other. And so there's a lot of factors, obviously, that go into it. None of us know how long we're going to live or how long our spouse is going to live. But I'm just going basic statistics here that we do have an issue if we haven't considered in this specific radio segment the women in the relationship, because statistically they're going to outlive the men.
Brian, what are some of the misconceptions that people have when it comes to survivability planning?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is on cash flow. A lot of people think that their expenses are going to maybe get cut in half or reduced dramatically when one person passes away. Boy, your housing cost doesn't change. Your property taxes don't drop. If you're paying rent, that's not going to drop. Your heat bill's the same, whether there's one person in the house or two. Your utilities, you know, basically the same. Your food bill might drop a little bit. But really, don't expect expenses to drop. In fact, some are going to go up. And the big one that's going to go up that you may not be aware of is your income taxes. Right. You know, why is that? Well, because you have the married filing joint status where taxes are lower. Combined income, the taxes on combined income is lower than if you were single. And so when somebody passes away, there is no widow tax bracket to look up. There's married filing joint and they're single. You're now single. And so when you're single filing taxes, you'll notice that the marginal tax rates are much higher at a much lower income level. And so right there, we have a big issue in income taxes going up. And let me throw another example out there. Let's say that you had a house that appreciated and the husband passes away and 4 years later, you decide to sell the house and has a $500,000 gain. And you remember the whole time your husband was saying, well, if we ever sell the house, we won't pay any tax because we get a $500,000 exclusion. Well, now all of a sudden you're told, oh, no, you only have a $250,000 exclusion. What do you mean? I thought it was $500,000. It was when you were married. Now you're single. And so if you're filing a single return, you only have a $250,000 exclusion. And now you owe tax when you sell your principal residence, in this example, on another $250,000 of income. And you got to pay capital gains tax on that. And if that isn't bad enough, the next year your Social Security gets whacked because now you had a high taxable bracket year and your Medicare surcharge went way up. That wouldn't have happened. Neither one of these things would have happened had your spouse still been around, but it changed when they passed away and you later sold the house. So boy, there's a lot of potential pitfalls that happen beyond the obvious grieving process. But from a tax situation, it doesn't get better. It often gets worse.
Brian, you mentioned Social Security. What happens in a situation when someone dies? There are two Social Security checks.
Well, in that case, that the surviving spouse would get the greater of the two. Okay. That sounds fine. Okay, great. But that means that the lower of the two goes away. So you were counting on that. And again, we thought, well, our expenses are going to get cut in half. Well, some of your income just went away too. So Social Security would go away in that case, and you would take the higher of the two, though.
Okay. And what about those people who have pensions? I understand there are different levels of survivability that you can put on those pensions.
Yeah. When somebody retires, they have choices. They can do 100% survivor. So if they pass away, 100% of their pension carries on, second to die. Or they can pick zero survivor, 50%, 66, 75, whatever. But very often people select between the 100% and the zero. I encourage people to have a survivor benefit. In my parents' situation, my dad was healthier than my mom his entire life. He was active, never got sick, never went to the doctor. He missed one day of work in 30 years.
Wow.
He was going to outlive everybody. So when he passed away first, he had selected the zero survivability on the pension,
right.
And my mom didn't get any money anymore. And so we knew that was coming because we knew he was going to pass first when he got ill. And so that was pretty devastating to her. And so it's a very important step in the process in this planning that we make sure we have adequate. I'm not saying everybody needs 100% survivor on this. It's a person-by-person kind of analysis that's done. And once in a while, there is a reason to pick the 100%. Let's say it was a spouse. I have another client where the spouse is longevity-wise is probably going to be around a long time. Family history, how you know their own health and all of that. Mm-hmm. And their spouse is not that way. And so she has a choice on 100% or zero. And because of the rest of their income being adequate, no matter what happens, we might pick a 0% survivability on that so that she can have a higher check for the rest of her life. And so there are reasons why you would pick a zero, but I'm just saying that this is a piece of the analysis that can be critical, and it's not just an independent decision. I can't do this in a vacuum where you just give me the data from your pension and that's it. We would need to know a lot of different things, and we need a full financial plan to look at other variables outside of the pension to make the right decision as it relates to this.
Brian, I read that 89% of retired women report being very or somewhat concerned with the increasing cost of health care. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, 89%. Think about that. There are very few statistics out there
9 in 10,
that are
yeah.
89%. So
right.
89% of retired women, I'm repeating, report being very or somewhat concerned with the increasing cost of health care. Wow. Okay. That sounds like something we need to address. And I'll throw a little levity at this one. You know, one of the questions you're going to have is, let's say you're a wife and you are wondering, well, who's going to take care of me when I need it? Is it going to be my husband who for 40 years can't remember to pick up his socks? I'm going to rely on him to take care of me and all my needs when I can't communicate properly?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. Am I going to rely on my kids that don't even call me every month and live in another state and have their own kids and their own issues and their jobs and all that? Probably not. Who's going to take care of me if I need help? And if I had to hire that out, where's that money coming from? Cost of them. Everybody knows. Everybody knows people that are in need of help and you know, whether it's a nursing home or some kind of assisted living or memory care or whatever it is, and they're aware of how devastating those costs can be. And so I think that the reason it's 89% is, well, it comes down to socks here, you know.
Yes, yeah.
Can't even remember that. How are we going to, you know, men aren't necessarily the most nurturing creature on the planet sometimes. And so when we think about what's going to happen or what could happen, I mean, we're all, you know, the statistically, again, I believe it's more than 70% of people will need some kind of assistance at some point in their life for basic living needs. And so this is a real thing. And I think that's why the stat is so high.
Brian, I read another stat that 56% of retired women are concerned that they'll not have enough money to live comfortably in retirement. Do you think that they have a valid concern?
Oh, absolutely. That's actually surprising to me by how low it is.
Right.
I would think it's much higher because people I talk to, and maybe, you know, I have a certain type of person that comes in, they're coming to see us because they're concerned about their retirement. And so mine's more like 98%, not 56%. But we'll go with 56. That means 44% of retired women feel like they're going to be fine. Now, sometimes they're not going to be fine. Maybe they haven't spent the time, male or female, doesn't matter here. Many times they don't understand what the costs are going to be later, what the ramifications of healthcare events are going to be, what taxes are going to look like, how required minimum distributions play into all of this, and so forth and so on. And some of the what-if scenarios, what if my husband passed away, what if my wife passes away, what if one of us needs long-term care, all of that kind of thing. And so I think that the reason it's 44% aren't worried is because a big chunk of that 44 just doesn't want to think about it. That everything's fine today. I don't want to think about what might happen later. I'm going day by day. And a lot of us do that. We're day by day people. And so I think having that financial plan is critical so that you can know what's going to happen.
Brian, when it comes to the differences between men and women, are there any other discrepancies that you've noticed?
Yeah, one discrepancy I've noticed is very often, again, this is statistically speaking, the man is the one that was maybe running the finances and making the investment decisions and making all of the decisions. And sometimes I got to chuckle at some of the meetings I've had. I remember one in particular where he came in, he was telling, you know, me how great he's been doing. And I'm like, well, if you're doing so great, why are you sitting here? But aside from that, he was going into it and telling me what they wanted and all this stuff. You know, he told me all about that. And then he told me what it is. You know, I asked the wife, what do you think? She likes blah, 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 blah. I'm like, whoa. Okay, we need to stop right here. Can I ask you to maybe, not talk for a little while? I want to find out from her, you know, I want to give her a voice. And so she started talking. He tried to interrupt and fill the room with his words again. And in a nice way, I said, zip it. So then I heard hers. And it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard. She just said, well, he has been running our finances. And last year we took a bath. And I'm nervous all the time. And I think my husband's an idiot. Okay.
Don't bench words.
No. And that's why we're here right now. And he was just looking, I had a bad year. And, maybe I do need some help. And it was kind of humorous. But it's usually not that bad. But there's always one person generally in charge of that. And I've noticed a lot of men find it interesting to do the financial stuff. Sometimes it's a female, too. But probably 3/4 of the time, in my experience, it's been the man that kind of runs it. But I think it's super important. You know, we already talked about the longevity aspect. So statistically, the financial planning is for the surviving spouse for the most part. And if that surviving spouse more than 3/4 of the time is a woman, then it's for the woman statistically. And so I think most men listening right now would go, well, I do want to take care of my spouse when something happens to me, if it happens first. If I pass away first or whatever the case, I do want to take care of my spouse. So maybe I should, you know, do that kind of planning. I think most people, anybody listening to the show would think that, I would suspect. So we're on the same page here. It's just that, you know, we're used to maybe kind of running the show sometimes. But I think it's super important that both the husband and wife show up at the financial planning meeting, both have input, and both people are heard.
Brian, before we continue our conversation here about what women need to know about retirement planning, I want to talk to our listeners here just very briefly. Imagine this, your spouse is going to have a difficult enough time dealing with the loss if you pass away. Don't add an unnecessary financial burden on top of everything because the proper plans were not put in place. To avoid that situation, give this number a call this weekend, 833-673-7373. That is a number that you'll call to ask for your complimentary Madrona analysis. Once again, that telephone number, 833-673-7373, and phone lines are open right now. You must have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify for this consultation. But if you do, we will send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Now, we're not going to try to sell you anything at all. This is just a conversational analysis to get your questions answered about our topic today. Once again, that telephone number is 833-673-7373. So make that call while you're thinking about it, 833-673-7373. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. Brian, just a moment ago, you told a humorous story about how you told the husband to, quote unquote, zip it in the conversation and you let the female in the relationship talk. Where was this in the process?
Yeah, this is super important as to where it is in the process. This is at the start of the process. This is the finding out from, you know, our attempt to find out what kind of life you want to live when it comes to your finances and what are your goals and objectives and, you know, what are your concerns, what's important to you, more important than other things and less important, all of that kind of thing. We need to find out all that stuff. And I recall a conversation I had once with somebody who said that they were talking to a whole bunch of advisors before they came in and talked to me. And I think it was five different ones. And I kind of chuckled and I asked this question. I said, on average, how many minutes into the meeting did it take before they started talking about the product they wanted to sell you? And he kind of chuckled and he said, wow, I think everyone was under 10 minutes. We were already talking product because unfortunately, in his case, they had something they wanted to sell so they can make money. And so they just kind of skipped over the other stuff and went right to product. And we're going to do things differently here. So product is really the last thing that we're going to talk about because we need to know what we're trying to solve here. You know, if I'm a mechanic, my product is the part that's broken and that needs to be fixed. If I, you know, make the most money on new radiators, I'm not just going to say, hey, everybody needs a new radiator. You know, it's like, we got to dissect the issue, the problem, the concerns, the opportunities, talk about the kind of life you want to live. And so this part of the process is at the beginning, not at the end, and not certainly not after some kind of product pitch.
Brian, when you do retirement planning for a surviving spouse specifically, what are some of the areas that you would concentrate more on than others?
Well, there's five things that investments can do for you. They can provide cash flow, security or protection, liquidity, growth potential, and tax savings. And so I always like to kind of define with a husband and wife in this case, you know, what are your priorities? And very often the priorities are different. People are different, even married people. They have different concerns and so forth. What I've seen a lot of is that the man will come in and say, well, I really want to grow this portfolio. I want to grow. And she's, you know, maybe sitting there kind of cringing, you know, okay, what do you think? And it's like, we have enough. We have more than enough. We're going to leave our kids too much, probably. I want security. I want to know that the next time the market crashes, I don't have to worry about it. The next time, you know, things are happening and somebody gets elected, I don't want to get elected, et cetera, that I don't have to worry about our finances and our retirement. I want security. And he's kind of looking at it, going, well, I want to grow the portfolio. I want to be richer. And she's like, I don't need that. And so when we start getting into the, you know, what's important, very often one person will say security, cash flow, then growth. And the other one will be the opposite. They'll say growth, cash flow, then security. And so we want all of these things. I understand that. Everybody wants growth, cash flow, security, liquidity, and tax savings. But no one investment does that. That's why we need to have an integrated approach to financial planning so that we can prioritize those issues that need to be prioritized. Now, sometimes they both agree. They both say cash flow is first, security second. I don't care about growth. I have enough money. I'm going to leave plenty to my heirs, whatever the case may be. And so they might be in agreement. But the tricky part comes when they're opposed, you know, as far as their priorities, blending those together, and we can create a plan that can blend those.
Brian, you mentioned the five things that money can do for you: cash flow, security, growth, liquidity, and tax savings. What are some of the places that you can put that money?
Yeah, I break it down into six particular areas. The first one is cash and cash equivalents. So that would be checking, savings, money market. It could be CDs would be a cash equivalent. You know, and then we get into the next one. Investments kind of hit a couple categories, but the second category is bonds. And there's many different kinds of bonds. It could be U.S. Treasury bonds, corporate bonds, municipal, foreign, short-term, mid-term, long-term, all different kinds of bond funds or individual bonds. The third area is the stock market. And you could buy individual stocks, ETFs, mutual funds. There's a lot of different ways to buy. You can buy sector funds, indexes, and all different parts of the equities market. The fourth area is the insurance industry products, and that would include fixed annuities, indexed annuities, variable annuities. Could be universal life, long-term care would be another one. And so that's kind of the insurance industry area. And then the next one is real estate. Now, you can be an active landlord, or many people invest in real estate passively, maybe in their retirement account or their investment accounts through real estate investment trusts, publicly traded REITs. You can do those on your own. But these next categories, you cannot do on your own. You need a financial planner. I should mention on the insurance categories, all of the areas I listed, you need an insurance licensed person to get into those. You also need a financial advisor to get into these, which would include private non-traded equity REITs. It could be Delaware Statutory Trust for 1031 exchanges, opportunity zones, various kinds of real estate, like certainly private placements and so forth, different sectors within the real estate market. So all of these, you need a financial advisor. And then the final area is, I call it alternatives, kind of a catch-all. Again, you generally need a financial advisor for most of this stuff. So that might be private credit funds, private equity funds. You can do crypto on your own. That's certainly one of them. We don't really work in that space. You can do various different kinds of maybe structured notes or buffered products. There are various different kinds of investments out there in the alternative space. So those are the six areas: cash and cash equivalents, bonds, equities, insurance company products, real estate, and alternative investments.
Brian, when it comes to what women need to know about retirement planning for the surviving spouse, we know what we want. We know what we're working with. How do you put this all together?
Yeah, so as I mentioned in the beginning of it, we want to find out what kind of life you want to live. I mean, that's really what this is about. It's not about how much money you die with. That's, you know, that's most people, that's not their ultimate goal. It's they want to live the life they want to live. And so we prioritize that statement. And so the first thing we talk about is lifestyle planning. What quality of life do you want from your finances, you know, from what it can provide? Do you want, you know, you want to take those cruises and vacations and so forth, second homes and hobbies and whatever it is that may come up, let's plan for that to see if that's feasible. So that's lifestyle planning. It has nothing to do with a product discussion. Next thing is people want to know how much money they're going to have to spend. What's their cash flow? And so we do cash flow planning so that people can count on a certain amount of money coming in. And once you know what that is, then you can adjust your budget accordingly. The next thing is the actual portfolio planning, because different investments provide different aspects. You know, some are really good at security, some are good at cash flow, some are good at potential growth. So we want to mix that together. Tax planning is huge. You got to, you know, if you want to get that one right, we talked taxes a little bit at the beginning of this segment, but taxes are huge. It's probably your biggest expense for most people. Tax planning needs to be considered. Protection planning, all the what ifs, Protection planning can be through your investments. It can be through long-term care. And then finally, gift planning for when you're alive. You know, do you want to plan to help your kids buy a house or put your grandkids through college or those kinds of things? And then legacy planning, of course, what happens after you pass. So all of these things are part of the financial planning process, and those are the things that we like to address with folks we talk to.
If you'd like to request your complimentary Madrona analysis, once again, our telephone number is 833-673-7373. If you have questions about what we've been talking about this morning, again, no cost, no obligation. Phone lines are open right now, 833-673-7373. And remember, this one call could make all the difference. If you're just joining us, this is Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans. I'm Jeff Shade, and we've just finished discussing what women need to know about retirement. If you want to hear the show again, don't worry, we're also a podcast. Just go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans. You'll get this show and weekday takeaways so that you can stay on top of your wealth and how to grow it. Brian, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be discussing what it means to be a fiduciary. All that and more when our show continues. Stay tuned.
Growing Your Wealth will be right back with even more ways to help sustain yourself and your wealth for years to come. Tired of only getting half the story? That's why it's so important to get your financial information from a CPA and an advisor like Brian Evans. Now let's get back to some of the most comprehensive financial information around. You're listening to Growing Your Wealth with Brian Evans.
Welcome back to Growing Your Wealth. I'm Jeff Shade, along with Brian Evans, CEO and President of Madrona Financial and CPAs. In just a moment, Brian and I are going to be discussing what it means to be a fiduciary. But first, we want to invite Dr. Richard Himmer in, one of the partners here at Madrona, to share a few non-financial tips on how to emotionally and mentally prepare for retirement. Richard?
Thank you, Jeff. As mentioned in previous segments and multiple times in my new podcast, How Not to Retire, guilt tripping can have a detrimental effect on relationships in retirement, causing strain and discomfort for both parties involved. Here are five examples that illustrate how guilt tripping can negatively impact your relationships. Now, here's kind of a heads up or a warning. This is not actually going to be an uplifting segment, but I would like you to just be aware. First of all, do you see this in other people? There's your start. And then second of all, looking in the mirror, do you see this in yourself? Either way, just give it a name. No judgment is necessary. Just give it a name. So for example, the persistent widow. If you know someone doing that, just recognize that they're in pain. It's not going well for them. If you see this in yourself, give it a name. Oh, that's me. That's what I'm doing. How can I escape from this pain? How can I move beyond that? In the podcast, I will go into solutions, but for today's episode or segment, I just want to make you aware of what that looks like. So beginning with number one, the persistent widow. A retired widow constantly guilt trips her adult children into visiting her every weekend, even though they have busy lives and families of their own. She frequently reminds them of her loneliness and sacrifices, kind of making them feel obligated to spend time with her. As a result, her children begin to dread these visits. So if this is you, recognize they're not coming because they want to anymore. They're coming because they feel they have to. They feel resentful and emotionally drained, which ultimately damages their relationship with you, if that's you. If you know of someone, maybe it's your mother that's doing it. Recognize what she's going through. We'll provide solutions later inside the podcast. Number two, the manipulative grandfather. A retired grandfather uses guilt as a tool to control his grandchildren's behavior. He often reminds them of the expensive gifts he's given them or the time he spent with them, implying that there's somehow a zero-sum game, that they owe him their obedience and loyalty. This is manipulation, and it creates an atmosphere of unease and distrust, again, causing the grandchildren or the children to distance themselves from grandpa. If grandpa is you, what you really want is them to spend more time with you, not to feel obligated. Having someone obligated to be around you, if you're enjoying that, that's a deeper addiction that we can cover in another episode. But you need to know, if you're inflicting pain and discomfort upon the ones you love, golly, you must be in a lot of pain to want to do that to someone that you actually consider a loved one. Okay, number three, the martyr parents. A retired couple consistently guilt trips their adult children for not providing them with financial support, even though the children are struggling to make ends meet themselves. I don't know where this mindset came from, but it seems to be in the baby boomers' parents' generation that there's some sort of obligation that the baby boomer children are supposed to take all financial and all emotional responsibility for their parents. That is not so. That creates animosity and distance. This behavior strains the relationships, and now the children, the baby boomers of said generation, feel resentful, and they avoid any kind of honesty in the communications with their parents or about finances. Okay, number four, the bitter retiree. A retired individual often harbors bitterness towards friends who are still working, guilt tripping them for not spending more time with him, for example. He accuses them of abandoning him or not valuing their friendships despite their efforts to maintain contact. By the way, if someone's already retired and friends are not, why is that somehow a negative? Why should that be considered a negative? Boy, take advantage of that time you have in retirement. Find out who you are. Have a purpose for getting up in the morning. And then invite your friends to be part of your very busy and hectic life. But if you're bored out of your gourd, that's a self-induced challenge. There's something you can do about it. This guilt-tripping behavior pushes your friends away. And as they feel unfairly judged and pressured to prioritize your needs over their own responsibilities, a distance, a gulf, a gap starts growing. And number five, the envious grandparent. A retired grandma, for example, guilt trips her adult children for spending more time with their in-laws than with her. She constantly compares the attention and care given to the other grandparents, making her children feel guilty for not prioritizing them. There's a number of reasons why this could be. One, they might be more fun and they're not guilt tripping. That could be an issue. So the step, and this is a short solution, start being interested in your grandchildren. Start being interested in your children. What's going on in their lives? Because if the conversation with your loved ones is always about you, your pain, your ailments, who the hell wants to be with you? It's not any fun. There's no enjoyment in hearing about your constant diatribe of pain. Okay, you have it. But there's a better way, a more effective way to work through that. This envy-driven guilt tripping creates tension. It creates discomfort within the family. And everybody talks about it behind your back, saying, well, can you visit this week so I can get next week? Because they don't want to face this jury and judge that they're somehow not living up to your expectations based on your immaculate perception. These examples demonstrate how guilt tripping can erode trust, breed resentment, and damage relationships in retirement. It isn't just about the money. And by the way, the money is not going to buy any kind of closer relationship with someone by giving them gifts. It's not going to hurt, but what's going to help is if you connect with them emotionally. But if there's no emotional connection and only a monetary compensation, they even start resenting that. And they're hesitant to accept the gift for fear of the strings attached with said gift. By recognizing and avoiding these manipulative behaviors, retirees can foster healthier, more positive connections with their loved ones based on mutual respect, understanding, and open communication. So I invite you to join me in a new podcast adventure called How Not to Retire, a psychological approach to a healthy and wealthy retirement, where we spend our time and our energy on the accumulation of said relationships called wealth. Money's not the focus. That's what you're listening to Brian's show about. It's critical, but money is not the focus. If you want to have wealth in your life, which is having enough, then this might be a great place to go to. To listen to it, please go to hownottoretire.com. Subscribe to the podcast. You can receive a complimentary ebook on effective communication in retirement. You can also sign up for Brian's weekly newsletter, which is really good, frankly. And if you are so inclined, invite an advisor to meet with you and discover for yourself how money supports the wealth idea that they're combined into a singular system called retirement planning. That's hownottoretire.com. This is Dr. Richard Hirmer reminding you the following. It's critical to align your habits with your purpose and embrace the journey of retirement with open arms, a curious mind, and a mindset to be interested in your loved ones so they want to be around you. Take care, everyone, and remember, don't try harder. Try different.
Thanks, Richard. And for our listeners, you can subscribe to Richard's podcast by going to hownottoretire.com. Brian, let's dive into our next segment here, what it means to be a fiduciary. Brian, the word fiduciary has become popular over the last few years. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to talk about because as I hear advertisements and TV commercials and all this stuff, it's always fiduciary, fiduciary, fiduciary. So as if that's something very unique. Well, everybody in the financial planning space has some fiduciary duty. Sometimes it's called best interest. Sometimes it's called fiduciary. So I'm not sure that's a huge differentiator so much. So I wanted to delve into this to help people really dissect what does that mean and does it mean anything at all? I mean, but more importantly, what are the qualitative parts of being a fiduciary? So I want to kind of run through a couple scenarios, Jeff. Let's say I'm the world's best butcher and I have the world's highest quality meat. Are you coming to me for nutritional advice?
No.
Yeah, but I'm the best one there is. I'm best in the world and I have the best quality meat. Why not?
Because even though you're the best butcher, Brian, all you have to sell me or all you have to offer me is just going to be meat. And as I recall, that's not a balanced diet.
Well, okay, what if I was a nutritionist who could only make money selling meat? Would you come to me for advice then?
No, I don't think so. I think I need a little bit more.
Oh, so if I were a nutritionist who could make money selling meat, vegetables, fruits, grains, and legumes, then you might come to me?
Now we're talking. We're getting there. You have more to offer than just one thing.
Ah, yeah, exactly. So it's very important in our industry, and I've written an article on this, that I don't know. Well, there's two things that bug me about just saying I'm a fiduciary and thinking, you know, that's going to be enough. One is, what are you able to offer? What solutions are you able to offer? If you don't have access to all the different kinds of solutions I may need, you may have the best heart in the world and care, but you can only sell me one thing. In our example, it was meat. And maybe I don't need meat. Maybe I need vegetables. Maybe I need other things in my diet. If you can only sell one thing, it's very difficult for me to think being a fiduciary is enough. The other issue in our industry is, let's say you do offer more than one thing for sale and you can satisfy that. If you can't do tax planning around investment planning, again, you could have the best heart in the world and care and truly trying to do your best. But if you're prohibited or unable to give income tax, estate, gift tax planning, real estate, business succession, all the different tax planning that someone may need, even the best intentions won't get me maybe what I'm looking for. And so it's very important, I think, that, you know, okay, you're a fiduciary, but do you have access to everything I need? And are you able to give me the advice and experience that I need in my situation?
Brian, going back to your analogy, if someone offers you tax advice, what would that mean?
Yeah, so that would be a specialty that is something that basically everybody pretty much needs. I mean, everybody that's listening to the show is filing a tax return, I would assume. So another analogy I had is in the medical field, and I think this relates to fiduciary also, and this might help people understand what I'm trying to say here. Let's say that you live in an area that has one doctor, country doctor, general medicine, there's no other doctor within 100 miles, and you move to this place. And nicest person out there, cares, is really trying to help you whenever you go in, super sweet person. And you think, okay, they're a fiduciary, and they're here to help me with anything I need. Problem is, you need a nutritionist, right? And you have a rare form of cancer, and you need some cancer treatment, and you need a hip replacement. Are you going to the country doctor for those things?
No.
Well, I hope not, because that's not what they're trained in. But those are things that you need. And so that's why many elderly people, when they're looking to downsize or move or buy a house, they're very often one of the biggest considerations is not necessarily how big the lot is.
Right.
It's how close is it to a full service hospital, because I may need other things. So here's an example. The tax planning is one of those, we'll call it the hip replacement in my analogy. If you need a hip replacement, you want to go to somebody who's done it before, is licensed to do that, knows what they're doing. You don't want somebody to just guess at it who isn't licensed and is going to try to do it anyway. And so there's a good analogy, I think, for tax planning done by non-CPAs, people that aren't trained in tax planning or aren't licensed to do it, but are giving basic kind of, well, you know, here's some tax planning. We're going to sell you a life insurance policy. Well, that's not really tax planning. And you may be a fiduciary and you may really care and you want to get it right to the best of your abilities. But sometimes you need a specialist. So I think my medical example is pretty good. I think most of us know, oh yeah, we do need a specialist from time to time. And we need different services for different needs, and those needs will change. I don't need a hip replacement every year.
Right.
Hopefully once every 20, 25 years, if I have a bad hip, is all I'll need it. But when I do need it, I really need it. And so there's probably a good analogy for the tax specialist.
Yeah, and I can relate to that analogy too. My doctor's a really nice guy, but he really can't offer everything. I think it might be time to look for another doctor. You need sort of the Mayo Clinic, I think, of medicine. How does that apply to finances in terms of a practice that can really offer everything? Sort of a Mayo Clinic of finances.
Yeah, we were talking about fiduciary, and most of my industry is saying that they are held to the fiduciary standard. Great. I think that's probably a good thing. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy when I hear that. However, if they can't offer everything that can be offered through a financial advisor, as I mentioned on the prior segment, if I have investment real estate and they've never heard of 1031 exchanges into Delaware statutory trust, I need to go somewhere else. I need somebody that can help me with that which I need. If they haven't worked with business succession and the income tax aspects of that, if they don't have access to both the stock market and insurance company products, because, you know, you might go to two different fiduciary advisors. There's one, the biggest advertiser out there is saying, we are fiduciaries. We're clearly different. And then they say they hate annuities. I was like, well, why do you hate a product? I mean, what if somebody needs a fixed annuity because they want to lock in a high interest rate for a long period of time? What if somebody needs guaranteed lifetime cash flow? Why do you hate that? That's silly. And then the next person will say, I hate the stock market. I love annuities. And I was like, well, wait a second. One loves them, one hates them. This doesn't make any sense. And they both said they're a fiduciary. And so if someone can't offer the stock market, bond market, cash equivalents, insurance company products, passive real estate, alternative investments, Delaware statutory trusts, and can't answer tax questions, Houston, we might have a problem. Yes, they're fiduciary. They might be meaning well and really care and trying to get it right, but maybe they can't help you the way you need to be helped. And so I think that the best advisor for somebody would be, obviously, that they're able to offer all the different products and services, and they're able to give tax advice as well as being licensed, held to the fiduciary standard.
How should our listeners go about trying to vet a fiduciary? What are some of the credentials that they may want to look for?
Yeah, well, one of them would be, do they have a Series 65 license? Are they a registered investment advisor? If they are a broker-dealer, affiliated with a broker-dealer, then they're not held to the same standard. It's called a best interest standard. It's lesser than a fiduciary standard. But if they're an investment advisor representative, they may be held to the fiduciary standard. Do they have an insurance license? There's another one, because if you don't, you can't even offer the insurance company products, which sometimes people really need. Do they have a tax credential, or are they working with a tax team? And when I say a tax credential, sometimes I hear financial advisors say, oh, we do your tax planning. We have somebody that prepares 1040s. I'm like, well, that's fine, but they may not have the experience that I need for a business succession or real estate succession or estate planning, that kind of thing. And so sometimes it's a qualitative thing. It's not enough just to have a credential. I mean, I had an insurance credential the first day after I passed the test and got licensed, but I didn't have any experience. I had a CPA, I passed my CPA exam. I didn't have any experience. So, the qualitative thing came with time. Do they have access to alternative investments? There's a lot of firms out there that, you can go to the biggest financial advisors out there, the biggest firms. They got stadiums named after themselves. They're on TV all the time, advertising, tens of thousands of people. So, they must offer everything. Well, surprisingly enough, they have to kind of limit what they offer because they have too many people. So when you go to them, can I invest in a 1031 exchange in a Delaware statutory trust? They're like, Can I get a universal life policy? No. Can I get an opportunity zone or buffered ETF or structured note or alternative investment, private equity or credit fund? No. And was there one? Yeah, one more no.
No.
And you're going, but you're the biggest company out there. You can't offer me? No, we cannot. But we can offer you a 60-40 stock bond split. We can offer you an annuity or whatever they're selling. And I was like, that's weird. You'd think bigger is better, more options. And that's just not the case across the board from what I've seen. So these are some of the questions. How do you invest the money? Because there's a lot of firms out there. They're on the radio too sometimes. They're basically asset gatherers. They do not actually make the decisions on your account. You might be going to a financial advisor and like, well, yeah, we outsource that. Oh, you outsource it. Okay. So you don't actually do any of the research on my investments. Nope. What's your job? To make you feel good? To sell you.
Right.
My job is sales. I'm in sales and I'm a fiduciary.
Right.
Like, okay,
really?
But you're in sales. You actually don't do tax research. You don't do investment research. Nope. I sell. And then I go to the next person. I try to sell them. So I think one of the things, the takeaways I might have from this segment is when you're talking to a financial advisor, figure out whether they're in sales or if they're in an advisory capacity more, that they actually do research, can answer your questions, have at least access to the different products and services, tax advice, all of that stuff. Not everybody has to know everything. Like some of our advisors are not CPAs. But they have access to a CPA firm. So that's how we cover that. And we work as a team here. So understanding whether you're in a sales pitch versus whether you're with somebody that can fulfill what you need is a very big piece when you're interviewing different financial advisors.
Brian, based on our conversation here, I'm sure that our listeners may have some questions about whether or not they're dealing with a true fiduciary. If that is you, listen up, because we may have an answer for you. Right now, I want you to call 833-673-7373. Why? Because phone lines are open right now for you to request your complimentary, no-cost, no-obligation Madrona analysis. It's just a friendly phone call. You'll leave some information. Someone will give you a call back during the next business day and set you up with a conversation with a Madrona advisor. So if you have questions about whether or not your financial advisor is acting in your best interest, call 833-673-7373 right now and request your Madrona analysis. Now, you must have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify. But if you do, as a bonus, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Very good book. It's not going to cost you a dime, but the Madrona analysis could be just what you need to address the issue of fiduciary, whether or not you're dealing with one. That number again, 833-673-7373. Make that call right now. This one call could make all the difference. Brian, getting back to our topic, no one person can be a specialist in every aspect of medicine or in financial planning. How do you do it?
Yeah, I think it's really a team approach. You think of, in our example, we were using a hospital, and there's nobody in that hospital that can perform every type of surgery and be the anesthesiologist in the surgery. That's just not possible. And so, you know, you need different people that can do it, but you also need access. And so that's one of the things that we do. I mentioned even the biggest firms out there often can't offer a lot of the things that we offer here. And I think that's kind of weird. But it's just the reality when you have too many people under the global roof of your company, you just can't offer everything for everybody. And so our advisors work in a team approach. So not all of our advisors, as I mentioned, are CPAs. Some of them are, but most of them are not. However, we have a CPA firm. So they've been assigned a senior CPA and a staff CPA so that they can go to them for all the calculations and you know, Roth conversions and what-if scenarios and all of that stuff. So they have access to that. There's different partners that we work with, custodians that we use for the trading. We use insurance companies and a big group that does all of our analysis of the different products out there. We work with them closely. We work closely with our sponsors of DSTs and private non-traded equity REITs and credit funds to understand that market and figure out which are the best products for our clients. Sometimes I'm brought in on meetings where it's very complex. I guess I'm as close to one person knowing all that stuff, but I don't even have access. I don't even know how to turn on our financial planning program, but I use financial plans all the time because I've got somebody that prepares them for me. And so I don't even have access to our tax program anymore, Jeff. They didn't even give me a login the last 5 or 10 years. But I can give tax advice. I've been a CPA 40 years.
Sure,
So we have a team of people that can help with all the different aspects. And that's how we work here. We work in a team environment so that our clients have access to anything that we're talking about on the radio.
Brian, as you said, there are many subspecialties out there. But again, if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is that no one really operates in a vacuum. This really is a team effort. And what one person does really affects the other person.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have our own investment committee. We do our own research. We bring in our meetings, we bring in different speakers that have different products, explain those. And we don't have, you know, everybody picking their own portfolio. We have portfolios designed for all of our advisors' clients for various needs. We have an annuity committee that gets together to figure out on an annual basis. We look at each annuity to figure out what the underlying investments should be allocated to. And so we don't just have a lot of rogue independent advisors here. We truly work as a team, and we do it internal to our own firm to do all the research so that we know what's going on. You can talk to our advisors, and it doesn't take you very long. You go, wow, you really study this stuff, don't you? You're not just trying to sell me. And in fact, you're not even talking product. You're talking about the life I want to live and all the things that Brian talks about on the radio. It'll be very consistent no matter who you talk to as one of our advisors, whichever one it is. You'll get a very consistent approach and a consistent outcome because we're working on a team approach to it.
Brian, I think everyone would like to think that they're working with someone who has their best interest at heart. What are the most important questions that we want our listeners to know about that they should ask to determine whether or not they're working with someone who really has their best interests at heart?
Yeah, I think that when I talk to people, I haven't rarely heard that they don't like their financial advisor. Mean financial advisors tend not to have any clients, and they don't last in our industry. So everybody's nice and cares, and you know, I think, and tries to do their best. I don't think that's the question. It's just whether they can truly operate in your best interest. And to do that, there's a couple of things that you might ask. One you might ask is licensing. Are you licensed to give tax advice, income and estate tax planning advice? Are you licensed to sell investments and alternative investments? And are you insurance licensed? Can you sell me a fixed annuity, for instance, if that's what I want? Doesn't mean I need you to sell me one. I just want to know, are you licensed to give tax advice, invest in all the products that are out there, and do insurance company products? The second one is, can you offer some specialized things like a Delaware statutory trust if I own real estate? Can you offer private equity? Can you offer that, again, that fixed annuity or universal life policy? It doesn't mean I need one or want one. I just like to know, can you offer all the different things that are out there? So that would be the second thing. So first we had licensing. Second is what you can offer. And then the third thing is, okay, you can offer it. Who does your research? Is that something in-house or do you outsource it? Because if you outsource it, you're relying on somebody you've never met to do your investments. And that can be problematic for some people. I would prefer, if I'm investing with somebody, I would like to know that the person I'm talking to has some input and is doing research and can explain the investments to me, isn't just paid to sell something that somebody else has researched. And so, not for everybody, but I would think, you know, most people would like to think that they're working with someone that does their own research. So those are the three things I can think of. Again, licensing, product offering, and then are you in-house or are you just selling someone else's products?
Brian, if our listeners have questions about whether or not they're working with someone who does have their best interest at heart, I would suggest that you request your Madrona analysis. Just call this number right now, 833-673-7373. You must have at least $500,000 or more of investable assets to qualify. But if you do, we'll send you out Brian's book, 7 Steps to a Successful Retirement. Call this number, 833-673-7373. Phone lines are open right now. And remember, as always, this one call could make all the difference. Brian, thank you for your time. I want to thank our listeners for joining us as well. For Brian Evans, I'm Jeff Shade. Get out. Have a great weekend, won't you? We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Growing Your Wealth.
No statements made during the Growing Your Wealth show should constitute tax, legal, or accounting advice. You should consult your own legal or tax professional on your own individual information. Brian Evans and Madrona Financial Services is licensed to offer investment advisory services through Madrona Financial Services, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Insurance products are offered through Madrona Insurance Services, LLC, a licensed insurance agency and an affiliate of Madrona Financial Services. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investors cannot invest directly into indexes. No investment strategy, including asset allocation and diversification, guarantees a profit or guarantees the avoidance of loss. Financial planning is an important tool that does not guarantee specific outcomes. DSD investments are only available to accredited investors and offered solely through the issuer's offering documents. The DST sponsor determines whether to accept any individual subscription documents. Madrona Financial and CPAs is a registered trade name used singly and collectively for the affiliate entities. Madrona Financial Services, LLC, Madrona and Bauer Evans, Inc., PC. Bauer Evans. Investment advisory services are provided through Madrona. CPA services are provided through Bauer Evans.